I'm Sandy Toksvig, and thank you for joining me on this very special edition of the News Quiz Extra. The News Quiz Extra is an extended version of the show. Do forgive me if I'm a tiny bit out of breath. We've only just got back from last week's broadcast in Sheffield. BBC cuts meant that we had to walk back. Now, while Jeremy gets his breath back, let's get on with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a headline from the BBC News website read by Carolyn Brown.
The Forestry Commission is to axe 250 posts in England.
Our thanks to everyone for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Fred McCauley. And opposite them on my left, Matthew Paris and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, I'll give you three guesses who your first question is about.
Oh, is it that old comic staple, Man Shot Dead at Point Blank Range?
It'll be that one, yeah.
They got Liam Fox.
Well, Colonel Gaddafi's sort of rather karmic death, I thought, shows the truth of that old showbiz adage, always be nice to people on the way up. Because you never know when you might meet them on the way down. And it's a momentous day for Libya, and possibly, I think, potentially an embarrassing one for Britain, because I'm kind of bracing myself that over the next few weeks we'll be watching events through our fingers as more and more facts come out about how British politicians might have cozied up to Gaddafi. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we're sitting here in a fortnight discussing the revelation that Tony Blair promised Gaddafi a peerage, half of Scotland, and John Prescott as a sex slave. Sorry, I've thrown myself with that mental image now.
You know, they've already got lots of Scottish flags out in Libya. They bought a whole bunch of them when, what's his name, went by, you know, the Lockerbie bomber.
McGrahy.
Al McGrahy, or Alistair, as we still call him.
People have said, well, would it have been better if he'd been caught, or is it better that he was killed outright? And I think they killed him because they knew that otherwise he would inevitably end up on TalkSport. Because that's what happens to all disgraced weirdos. They end up ultimately on TalkSport.
Do you know, on Thursday morning, I heard that Westlife were breaking up, and I honestly thought the day couldn't get any better.
It was
just...
it was a dead seat that they were going to get him in the end.
Hey, thank you.
That must be the first comic pun from a Libyan town's name.
Yeah, sure. I would think. Sure.
Thank you, yes.
You should be triply pleased with that.
Hey!
The official government position, as I understand it, is that we are pleased that he was overthrown because he was guilty of killing his own people, although that only started to bother us quite recently. And to be fair, I think nobody actually noticed that he was an insane tyrant, because it's not as if you could tell by just looking at him.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know, there were clues, like the mad dog nickname.
It is extraordinary that the list that's got Saddam and then Radovan Karadzic and now Gaddafi, pretty soon, I would imagine, Tony Blair will be the only war criminal left. Colonel Gaddafi has been killed after 42 years in power, and his stronghold Siirt has fallen to the rebel Libyan army. World leaders welcomed the news. The Dutch Prime Minister called it a significant moment. David Cameron said he was proud of the UK's role, while Silvio Berlusconi said, hey, just leaves more babes for the rest of us. The embattled leader hadn't been seen for months. I'm just going to pause there where you can insert your own Ed Miliband joke. US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was filmed receiving the news about Gaddafi on her BlackBerry and immediately declared, look at that, my BlackBerry's working. The former Libyan leader was found with a golden gun, proof that even in Tripoli, the only way is Essex has had an unfortunate impact. Okay, 2 points to Andy. Fred, who's been occupying the news with their intense commitment?
Is this the new form of protest?
Yes.
Yeah, it's been happening all over the place. London, New York, I think, Madrid. There were
what, 400 in Stockholm? But they might have just been a misguided IKEA queue looking for the self-assembly self-assembly meatballs. But they stormed the stock exchange, and the chants were intriguing. The protesters were shouting, "Shame on you, shame on you." And the people inside the stock exchange were replying with, "Wasn't actually just us, it was mainly the banks in 2006 mixing up the subprime mortgages with others, slicing and dicing, it all went a bit pear-shaped, and then the financial collapse in 2008. And then the protester said, OK, we didn't fully understand, thanks for it." And "Let us in, let us in." And the two doormen going, "Well, actually, you've not got accreditation. OK, give us an A."
But what I don't understand is, why are they besieging St Paul's Cathedral? St Paul's Cathedral's the only place where people aren't paid very much in the city.
Yeah, but do you really think that camping will ever damage capitalism?
But
camping damages marriage, not capitalism.
The dome, the whispering dome gallery in St Paul's would have been perfect for them. "What do we want?"
What struck me was how the press really loves to have it both ways, because normally when there's a demonstration, they say, "Oh, it's just a tight group of diehard fanatics." That's usually the criticism. But I've seen several pieces in the papers complaining that this is just a diverse group of reasonable people.
That's our audience.
People keep saying, "Oh, the trouble is when they don't really know what they want." And they think, yeah, but they're just mirroring what is happening with governments. And the mistake we make is to think that the establishment actually know what they're doing. The establishment have got no more clue what they're doing than we have.
Well, that's it. I mean, Mervyn King, I mean, Governor of the Bank of England this week, said, "Time's running out, you know, for us to sort out this mess." Well, you're the Governor of the Bank of England. That'd be like us saying, you know, there's not enough fun poked at the news on Radio 4.
But no one knows what's going on, and I think people are just out there reflecting the sort of fear.
Even editorials in The Telegraph are saying, "Well, capitalism clearly doesn't work." I mean, everyone more or less agreed that it's all a disaster. It's just a question of what it can be replaced.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do, Matthew.
Matthew, speak up.
Go on then, Matthew, disagree.
No, capitalism has won. Capitalism is one lock, stock and barrel. There are lots of problems with it, but no one's suggesting any alternative system now.
Everybody is. We just don't know what it is yet.
Yes.
Do you know my theory, Sandy, is it's not the bankers to blame, it's two Irishmen, Bob Geldof and Bono. They tried to make poverty history and have made it popular.
So, it's just, I mean, it's nothing to do with anything, but do you not think that the socialism that the Scandinavian countries practice works well?
Well,
they're consistently number one, two, three and four in the happiness stakes. Well, I don't know if Finland is, they're also drunk, I don't know if they even... I don't know if they enter for the contest, but...
Absolutely not. No, Sunny. I mean, Scandinavia does have one of the world's largest fields of oil and gas. They also have a very small population. Until quite recently, they've followed a very restrictive immigration policy. They're relatively small countries with relatively small populations and a terrifically uniformist. If you go to Sweden, everybody lives in the same way. Everybody has the same candles lit in the same way in their windows at Christmas. I really don't like that sort of Scandinavian uniformity.
Thank God somebody has had the courage to speak out at last. I say for too long the Vikings have had their own way.
See, what we do, Matthew, we're a very small country, but we take turns to be there. And that's why I've been here for a bit. It's not been my turn. Protesters have...
I'm angry about those Swedes now. Damn
right.
Them.
Damn them.
Damn those Swedes.
With their nice candles in the window. How dare they?
They're a bit mental, Scandinavian people. Matthew is right about that. You are a bit weird. It's dark all the time and you're all drunk.
It's true.
Matthew, I mean, there's a sort of a surface of social democracy, but a kind of weird national socialism underneath.
Yeah, I'm starting to think in terms of an invasion. I don't know about you.
Getting our own back, wouldn't we?
Yeah. Isn't that odd? In a few minutes, we come to the conclusion we should invade Sweden.
Yeah. Help yourself. I'm from Denmark. Now. Protesters have erected up to 200 tents outside St Paul's Cathedral as part of a worldwide anti-capitalist protest inspired by the Occupy Wall Street movement. They set up camp for a week while city workers went and robbed their houses. In his Sunday sermon, St Paul's canon Dr Giles Fraser warned you cannot worship God and money. There's a man who's never been to the Vatican. Estimates of the size of the crowd ranged from about 2,000 to 3,000, though protesters claimed a much larger figure, displaying exactly the sort of analysis that got us into this mess in the first place. 2 points to Fred. Matthew, have a listen to this. Matthew, what are the odds that an historic deal will end in peace?
Oh, this is the extraordinary exchange between Israel and Palestine, where 1,000 Palestinian prisoners have been exchanged for one Israeli soldier. And I simply can't understand it. I mean, imagine that a British soldier got caught in Afghanistan and the Taliban and Al-Qaeda said that we must release 1,000 terrorists from our prison in return for him. I can only imagine that these 1,000 Palestinian prisoners, they hadn't done anything very badly wrong. Or why would you let 1,000 of them out?
It is an amazing rate of exchange. I mean, it's like he's a rare Pokemon card, isn't it? It's an astonishing
thing. He looks a nice enough boy, but...
He does. Yeah. But he looked very, very thin.
I was shocked by that.
Yes.
Because I have spent time in the West Bank, and they're feeders. Maybe not so much in Gaza. You could be walking in carrying a box of pizza, eating it, and say, no, I'm fine, I'm upset. And they will feed you. You wake them up in the middle of the night, they will get up and feed you. You can arrive in Jerusalem or Bethlehem as a committed vegetarian and leave with an entire sheep in your colon. Most hospitable people, but maybe Hamas not so much. Or maybe it helps if you don't turn up in a tank.
But it's never going to be peace in the Middle East, is there, until Palestine are allowed to enter a transsexual singer in the Eurovision Song Contest? That's the way forward. It was a momentous day. The Stone Roses announced they were reforming. I have no idea who they are.
I'm always confused. I watch the stories about the Middle East and, you know, centuries of war and conflict, and I think to myself, isn't Blair supposed to be sorting all this out?
Yes. He's very
What's
busy.
He been doing? He's... Get off his arse and sort this out.
He's in his counting house. Keeps him busy.
You're not allowed to reveal his secret identity, though. He might be a world-fixing superhero, but you're not allowed to reveal that.
Right.
Oh, that
because really, by day, he's a money-grubbing, greedy, self-serving, vain lunatic. Only at night, with his secret identity, is he actually changing the world to a peaceful, stable, anarcho-syndicalist commune.
You know, it all makes sense now.
Yeah.
This week, Israel freed 477 Palestinian prisoners in return for just one man, Adam Werety. Just seeing if you're all still with me. Israeli Army Sergeant Gilad Shalit had been held by Hamas and cut off from the outside world since 2006. The whole of Israel was glued to the television to see Shalit's release. It was even more popular viewing than Israel's property program, Occupation, Occupation, Occupation. 2 points, Matthew. Jeremy, who wants to put the secret into Justice Secretary?
Ah, Ken Clark. You see, one week he says something delights us, like Theresa May's an idiot. And then the next week he reverts and says something weird. And Ken's plan is that the law will be changed in such a way that MI5 and MI6 can torture people and not have to admit it, fundamentally. So what happens is you're a defendant who's been tortured and you want your case heard, but you can't actually hear any of the evidence which relates to intelligence, which is all of the evidence, because those are the people who tortured you. And so you've got someone called a special advocate, and they go and hear the evidence from 6 or 5 or the CIA, and they're not allowed to tell you it. So you find this person who goes and hears the evidence, and then they come to your cell, and you say, did they say anything about me? No, I don't think they... No, not specific. Nothing about the torture. A little... But honestly, you don't want to know. It'll only upset you. It'll just bring back bad memories. You don't want to hear about it.
And in fact, the Justice Secretary has gone further, although this hasn't yet been published. The form the torture's going to take is that he's going to blow cigar smoke in the prisoner's face and force them to listen to modern jazz until they confess.
Surely this is not a good thing, these secret courts. If we don't want people to watch what's going on, put it on Channel 5 or something, but don't...
I think this system of not letting the defendant know the evidence that might be important, I think there is a legal precedent for it. because I think it's the same legal system that is used in Alice in Wonderland.
An extra point, if anybody can tell me, the other Justice Minister who has also been in the news this week.
Chinnoogly.
Chinnoogly.
Well, Chinnoogly. It's a very, very bad hand of Scrabble, I would have.
He's been stripped of his responsibility to regulate legal firms that ambulance chase the public. I thought we'd got rid of all the ambulances. Justice Secretary Ken Clark wants to introduce secret courts so that intelligence which may have been obtained by torture will never be disclosed to the public in court hearings. Clark made the proposals in a green paper called... Well, I'm not allowed to tell you, I'd have to kill you. The British government has often denied it has obtained evidence by the use of torture, despite many detainees' statements beginning, "Ouch, get off, that bloody hurts, ah, you bugger." 3 points to Jeremy for that one. So at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Fred have got 4 points, but Matthew and Jeremy have gone into the lead with 5. We start round two with a sign spotted on the public toilets in Winchcombe, Gloucestershire.
Urinal. Insert 20p coin and slide knob.
And our thanks to Gordon Young for sending us that. Andy, who thinks charity begins at home as long as it's a small one?
This is about elderly bed blockers. Mm. Someone has suggested that it's socially irresponsible for older people whose children have grown up and left home to live in houses that have lots of bedrooms and that they don't need. And, I mean, it's true. I mean, you know, there are cases like that. I mean, I know of a couple. They're both pensioners and their kids are grown up, got married. They've got this big place. They have got a lot of spare bedrooms. They're in Australia at the moment on some journey. And clearly, they should be encouraged or made to downsize into a sort of small flat in Tring. That would be good. Because they don't need that big place at the top of the mall next to St James's Park, for those of you who haven't worked it out yet. But I found this story rather offensive. First off...
Perhaps because you're old.
Thank you, Matthew. First off, whose kids leave home nowadays anyway? They can't afford to. There are very few older people who are going to have houses full of empty bedrooms. They will have 48-year-old children in them. But the thing that most irritated me about this story was the general tone of it, which is that sort of old people are getting in the way. You've had your turn. Now get out of your house and go into moving to somewhere smaller and die.
Well, the report was entitled Hoarding of Housing. I mean, yes, it's good to see they approach it with a fair and open mind. Why don't they just call it Just Hurry Up and Die?
I'm completely against it. I am an old person. I'm 62, I think. And
I'm starting to forget.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I certainly am. It's the other way around. I think old people need bigger houses because when we're old, we've got lots of friends, lots of people coming to stay with us, lots of possessions. Young people, they don't have friends, they don't have possessions. They could live in cardboard boxes, younger people. It's the old people who need the big houses.
Also, you want room to spread out,
yes,
don't you?
That's yes.
The thing. It's your stuff, isn't it?
It's your stuff.
You have all this stuff, and it's very important that when you die, that you hand over to your children boxes and boxes full of stuff that take them years to sort out.
To prove how much they love you, it's going to take
unpaid
them.
Taxes. I've got all my exercise books from primary school for my daughter to read, you know, when I die.
Do you know what it sounds like? We're in a home already. Honestly. We are actually... We are actually recording this all sitting in those chairs with wings so we don't fall out.
I've got a whole cardboard box full of pieces of string that are too short to be of any use to anybody.
I think you ought to get those pieces of string out of that box, because that box could be used by other pieces of string.
Yeah.
Who've maybe not had a box before.
I don't think it's a new phenomenon. I remember my parents downsized when I went off to university, but in those days, we still had the phone book, so every year I was able to find out where they'd gone.
Things differently. Apparently, one of the complaints in the report was that young people can't fit a dining room table into the places where they're living. Get an app for that. Honestly, there must be dining room table
young
app.
Young people don't give dinner parties, so it doesn't matter. No. It's old people who give dinner parties.
That's right, and then show people all their little bits of string.
That's right.
Old people need to have rooms because at least one room you don't go in.
Yeah.
My My nan and granddad always had a posh front room that you never, ever went in. The only thing in there was a test tube full of multicoloured sand from the Isle of Wight. And the only person who could go in that room was the rent man or the vicar. Nobody else was, and the heating was never on in that room. It was like a shrine.
It's also, it's perfectly possible...
Actually, it was a hydroponic unit. They were drug dealers.
Possible in a big house that there are loads of old people living there, not just one or two, but they just didn't hear the doorbell. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, but Sandy, in your house there are priests hiding in the walls, let's be honest.
I live on a boat. Well,
you should knock through.
I should. A charity has called for older people to be encouraged to move into smaller homes to help tackle the housing crisis. On the whole, younger people live in houses much smaller than the UK average of 88 square metres. The problem is even worse in America, where, due to the obesity crisis, an 88 square metre house is worn as a belt. 2 points to Andy. Fred, have a listen to this. Fred, who has lost their patience with the sick and tired?
It's GPs. They're fed up with some of their patients. The patients who have complained about their treatment, not the medical treatment, about the treatment that they get from the surgeries, some of the receptionists. Do we have any GPs receptionists in with us tonight? Anybody? Anybody in? Anybody's a GP? No, that's a bit too quick to answer. I don't think you can be. And besides... You know, what gets me about my GP is you phone up to make an appointment and they'll say, oh, well, the nearest appointment we can give you is 3 weeks' time. Can you tell me what's wrong with you? And I say, well, what's wrong with me now or what's going to be wrong with me in 3 weeks' time? Because that's entirely different. 3 weeks' time, I'll be hoarse from shouting at you. And it's, you know, it's embarrassing enough telling your GP what's wrong with you, you know, without having to tell the receptionist. And I just blurt out, Fred Macaulay Piles! And she said, and what's your date of birth, Mr. Piles? I said, oh, no.
I read this report and I noticed that one of the GP practices said, we have a zero tolerance policy towards abuse. And in my recent experience, people who say we have a zero tolerance policy usually mean we are ludicrously sensitive. Because there was an incident at Gatwick Airport where we were going through and a man decided he needed to inspect our toothpaste. And he came over and he said, I am going to go over there and I am going to test this toothpaste, perform a chemical test, and then I shall bring it back to you. And I looked at him and went, OK, yeah. And he moved off and he performed this test at a speed that a three-toed sloth would find embarrassing, in the most pernickety, pedantic way. And about 2 hours later, he brought the toothpaste back, and I expressed the view as a critique that he might like to hang on to the toothpaste now, seeing as how he seemed so attached to it. And I did also comment on the speed that he moved at, and I may possibly have remarked that he now had moss growing on his shoulder. Something along those lines, right? At which point, a woman summoned me and said, you, sir, step over here. And she said, we have a zero tolerance policy towards abuse. And I said, well, actually, that was a complaint. And I offered to demonstrate abuse, but she...
You did try and strangle her with your floss, didn't you?
You only ever go to the doctor now for a second opinion, though, because you've Googled your illness. You know what's wrong with you, don't you?
Yeah.
Sore throat, small cough, temperature, cancer.
The last time I went to the doctor, it was about my wheat intolerance. Every time I eat cakes and biscuits, I just seem to swell up. A report by Health Ombudsman Anne Abraham has revealed patients are being banned from their GPs for making minor complaints. In good news, Dr. Fox is now free to see patients. As long as you don't mind Nurse Werity sitting in. Two points to Fred. Matthew, which copper told a whopper?
Oh, this was this fellow who was supposed to be infiltrating some subversive group, and so he actually joined them under a false name and gave evidence in court under oath with his false name.
If a police officer can lie and pretend to be an activist, can you then impersonate a police officer? How cool if the chief of police turns out to be an environmental activist called Frogspawn.
Is that not perjury? Because the oath distinctly says, I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. It doesn't say, I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, unless I'm a secret policeman, in which case I can tell more lies than Jeffrey Archer competing with Jonathan Aitken in the Christmas edition of Strictly Come Perjuring.
But police have lied in court for years. Did you know that John Thor was not a real policeman?
It must be such hard work living a double life, mustn't it? I mean, I'm exhausted living one.
This guy, he was known as Jim the Van because he was the only one to have a van.
Did he have a flashing light on the top?
I don't know. On tonight's news quiz, I'll be known as Sandy the Bra. A major report into police undercover investigations has been delayed after allegations that a police officer took part in a criminal trial using his false name. The police have denied using false identities. Stuff and nonsense, said a PC Bendover. 2 points, Matthew. Jeremy, why is your IQ just not fair?
Oh, this is the extraordinary revelation that your intelligence can change, which is not news to anybody apart from eugenicists, supremacists and people who think doing puzzles makes you a good person. The IQ can change from being a pretty useless way of judging people to an entirely useless way of judging people in the course of a few years. But there are people who set store by this and they join Mensa and... But there are different kinds of intelligence. There is intuitive intelligence, there is quick intelligence, there is sort of slow burn, methodical intelligence. There are people who are very good at the Times crossword, but not so good at understanding personal hygiene.
But they say it's teenagers' IQs can change dramatically. Well, it could be they're just copying them off internet sites.
John, you go.
No, after you.
No, I had something intelligent to say, but it's gone.
Say during your teenage years, every other part of your body is changing with alarming speed. Why wouldn't your brain be changing?
I do think teenagers' IQ is flexible. Certainly, it drops if they get anywhere near a washing machine. I mean,
don't you think that some people are more intelligent than others?
But it depends what you mean by intelligent. 85. People are intelligent in different ways. Some people aren't very good at anything. Anne Robinson.
New research shows that teenagers' IQs are not fixed but can fluctuate considerably as their brains develop. Tests were conducted on 33 teenagers. The other 1,967 failed to turn up on time.
Everybody's intelligence changes through life. Of course it does.
Oh, poppycock. This is liberal poppycock.
Do you know where my keys are? I don't know where my keys are. 20 years ago, I knew where my keys were. I don't know where they are now.
I had lots of friends at school. Some of them I've kept in touch with. The stupid ones are still stupid and the clever ones are still clever. There's been no development at all in any of them.
Well, you name them then. This is your chance to name your stupid friends. on the BBC.
They're all in the cabinet. At the end of round two, the scores are Andy and Fred have got 8 points, but Matthew and Jeremy are still in the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from Salvo Web, the architectural salvage website.
Church bell being removed from demolition of 1930s church in great condition. 4 foot by 3 foot, bronze. For info, please ring.
And our thanks to Ian Hunt for sending us that. Andy, have a listen to this.
Thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it?
Can I just tell the listeners at home that Sandy Toksvig danced in a very embarrassing way? All through that
music. I thought it was like the beginning of Tales of the Unexpected. I thought that was alluring.
The words "at your age" came to mind, ladies and gentlemen.
I was enjoying some uniform Scandinavian contributions to culture. Andy, which newlywed said, "No, thank you," for the music?
It was an opera trio who were booked for a wedding reception. And I felt some sympathy for the opera trio because people complained that when they started singing ABBA songs loudly, they felt physically sick. And people say that to me sometimes. What I didn't understand was, you're sitting there, it's your wedding reception, you've booked a music act, and they're too loud.
Yeah.
Isn't there a simple remedy for that? Don't you go up to them and say, "Actually, it's a bit loud."
No, but apparently they did. They went to the sound engineer and he couldn't hear.
Well, then there's these things called gestures, aren't there? There is a too loud gesture.
What is the gesture for too loud?
Too loud?
Well, that's not helping the listeners at home, is it? And you didn't need to get that out. I thought that was no good.
Old English vaudevillian traditions coming through.
Yeah, but the irony is they were 76, isn't it? Oh, it was like a rock concert, but members of the Stone Roses are in their 70s now. I mean, it's not... 70s, it's not very old to be in your 70s anymore,
Why weren't they getting married if they were 76?
Oh, don't you think that's lovely?
No. I think it's a bit pointless, isn't it, at that age?
About love and romance. I think it's fantastic.
It's never too late to subsume your whole identity.
And they were able to downsize twice.
Yeah. Good point. Virginia and Alan Lynch received £1,500 in an out-of-court settlement from Soprano Bella, a company that provided their wedding singers after complaining their performance was so loud it made a guest sick. The bride and groom are in their 70s. A medley of ABBA hits particularly upset them as they'd lost grandparents at Waterloo. 2 points to Andy. Fred, if I tell you that this question cost me a shilling, will you know what I'm talking about?
I would indeed, because you're talking to an ex-Boy Scout here.
Ooh.
It's Bob a Job.
Yes.
I have to say with a degree of embarrassment.
What? I was a Boy Scout. My dad was a Scoutmaster.
No, that's not the embarrassment.
What's the embarrassment?
I was proud to be a Boy Scout. Yeah. It took me on wonderful trips abroad and things like that, which were paid for out of the Bob a Job scheme, which was, I think, technically illegal in those days. You meant to give it to charity. We just funded our summer holidays.
So this is Bob a Job Gate.
Yes, it is. But no, the embarrassment comes from the fact that when Mrs. Fred and I bought the house that we're in 10 years ago, there was a "job done" sticker in the window. And they'd done away with Bob a Job Week in 1992, right? So this sticker had been there right up until 2001, and it was only 2 years ago that we took it off the window.
I thought you meant your house had been built by Boy Scouts.
Did you know that the chief scout is Bear Grylls?
Yes.
I think it sounds like a Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall recipe.
Bear Grylls is a fantastic personality, chief scout, because he's the man who did those programs where, for instance, he demonstrated that if you are stuck alone in the middle of the desert and it's freezing cold, the thing you do is you hollow out a camel and sleep inside there.
Yeah.
And that would have been great. When I was a Boy Scout, if there'd been a camel hollowing out badge...
Yeah.
I would have loved that, because you couldn't see my arm for badges.
You'd never been out of the zoo then, would you? You'd have just...
Get the camel to agree to that then.
Well, I think the camel probably has to be dead, Sandy. I think there are very few camels that are that cooperative.
Yeah.
Bear Grylls ate a skunk, because I saw him do that on a flight to New York. I mean, you know, it was one of those in-flight movies.
That's a special vegetarian option.
Oh dear. Yeah, I tried googling Bob a Job and I got some extraordinary.
The Scouts are doing really well because there are now Girl Scouts. See, when I was a Scout, we didn't have girls, we had badges.
Badgers?
Yeah, badges, not badgers. And I can remember going on a jamboree to Sweden. We got there in the middle of the night and we put our tent up. And in the morning, I could hear a lot of cheering. I said to the Scoutmaster, "What's that?" He said, "That's the Girl Scouts." And I said, "Girl Scouts?" He said, "Yeah, they have Girl Scouts in Sweden." And I looked up, and there were about 1,500 Swedish girls, sort of 15, 16 years old, walking down the path towards me. And that was probably the most magical moment of my life.
So all these girls, blonde, gorgeous,
yeah, walking towards
rather
me.
Uniform and yet rather beautiful. Just saying.
Yeah.
After a 20-year break, the Scouts are bringing back Bobba Job Week. Bobba Job Week was disbanded over fears that children knocking on strangers' doors could fall prey to paedophiles. Luckily, the new generation is so obese it's unlikely anyone will find them attractive. At 2 points to Fred. Matthew, why should old wives use their heads and not their tails?
There's some report that people do believe old wives' tales, but that they are never, in fact, true.
An apple a day does keep the doctor away, depending on your aim.
Can swinging on your chair put someone's eye out?
Yeah.
My mum's everything could put someone's eye out. Sit up straight, you'll put someone's eye out. Don't bolt your food, you'll put someone's eye out.
10% of people still think that carrots will help you see in the dark. I use a torch. It was World War II propaganda.
Yeah, brilliant piece of propaganda to throw the Germans off the scent, the fact that we'd invented radar. How gullible are those Germans? Oh, they have these super carrots.
How many of them didn't realise Churchill was a sock puppet?
I thought those things were true, though, like going out with wet hair gives you a cold.
These are hardly medieval levels of credulity, and because it was all about medical myths.
So what you believe, is it?
Yeah, like the one about sugar doesn't make children hyperactive. Now, I've been thinking about this. It seems to me that clearly what happens is sugar gives everybody energy. You know, when you're an adult and you get a surge of energy, you probably channel it into getting some work done. And when you're a kid and you get a surge of energy, you run up the curtains. And that's it.
Bobba Job Week is running up curtains.
Yeah, yeah.
did the respondents know that voting Liberal Democrat will bring you 7 years bad luck, for instance?
Well, I believe if the wind changes, you'll stay like that. I was crouching when the wind changed. A survey of 2,000 adults has found that many Britons still believe in old wives' tales, despite evidence proving that they are false. Dr. Mike Smith of St. George's Hospital Medical School said, "Old wives' tales should not be listened to or abided by unless you're married to her, and then you should at least nod and pretend." 2 points to Matthew. Jeremy, who'd rather do time than clock in?
This is Mrs. Gucci, Signora Gucci, the Black Widow. So called because there's a spider called the Black Widow, that the lady spideress, what she does is she meets the man spider, which is quite distinct from Spider-Man. Just, I know many of you are not experts in spiderology in the way that I am, but it's quite an important distinction. But the lady spideress does it, which is the scientific way of saying mating, with the male Spider-Man, and then kills him and eats him. And after millennia of evolution, male spiders have not cottoned onto this. They're still so pleased. Oh, bloody hell, I think I'm in here. That they just won't believe the stories or notice all the sort of headless carcasses of their mates strewn around the web. But, yeah, what this spider does is, when she's through mating with her male spider, she hires a hit spider to kill him. And what this woman did, you see, she married a Gucci, and of course, being a Gucci, he was rich. She married him. Now, some women do this, but usually they have the patience to sit it out, you know. They will just demand more and more home improvements until he loses the will to live. But she couldn't wait for the passage of time, got greedy, and then hired someone to whack him and make it look like an accident.
Did she eat him?
Well, no.
No, she didn't. No, she's not mental. She's just a bit greedy. And she had. But now she's in chokey for hiring the man. But she's supposed to do day release.
Well, she was offered that she could come out.
Yeah, you can come out and do work in the community, but she won't because she's that lazy.
Well, she says she's never worked and she's not going to start now. She's got the most astonishing attitude. She once famously said, "I would rather weep in a Rolls Royce than be happy on a bicycle." Can I just say, as a woman, I'm going to confirm, any woman can be happy on a bicycle. Just need a cobbled street. The wind behind your back. Honest to God.
The most fantastic thing, because I was reading the story, they painted this picture of this fantastic femme fatale. I got to this bit about the prison regime, and it said that in prison she has a pet ferret. And my first thought was, well, what sort of prison allows you to have a ferret? And then my second thought was, what sort of femme fatale has a pet ferret?
What's so shocking about this Gucci lady not wanting to come out of prison and do community work. You've got a nice, comfortable cell. You've got lots of books to read, perhaps videos to watch. Why do you want to go out and do community work?
No, I'm with her.
I'm with her.
Yeah, there's lots of menial jobs I wouldn't do. Well, actually, they mostly involve George Osborne and a sponge bath, but... I made myself feel a little bit of sick came up in my throat. Italy's black widow, Patrizia Reggiani, in prison for murdering her husband Maurizio Gucci, heir to the Gucci fortune, has turned down an offer of day release because she refuses to do a menial job. Regina once told a court she would rather weep in a Rolls Royce than be happy on a bicycle. She could always go for a middle ground and be emotionally numb in a Renault Clio. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along, Mr. Hamilton.
This is sent in by Norman Wright, and it's a comment made by Brooke Shields. And she said, smoking kills. If you're killed, you've lost a very important part of your life.
Mr. McCauley.
This has been sent in by Judith Brown from Cumbria, and it's from the Bridgeton and Annapolis County Reader in Nova Scotia. Upcoming events at Bridgeton and Area Library, Thursday, September 29th, Stuffing Bras. Join Leota Daniels for a presentation on how Comfy Curves knitted breast prosthetics came to be. This is not a hands-on workshop.
Mr. Paris.
Jonathan Baldwin sent in this clipping from an American newspaper. It's a letter to the editor. Sir, a lot of deer get hit by cars west of Crown Point on US 231... There are too many cars to have the deer crossing here. The deer crossing sign needs to be moved to a road with less traffic.
Let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Fred have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Matthew and Jeremy with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting sent in by Ronan Daly about Sir Paul McCartney's wedding and spotted on the BBC News website.
The couple posed for pictures outside Old Marylebone Town Hall Register Office after being showered with confetti by wedding guests. Miss Chevelle, 51, from New York, is an heiress to a trucking fortune. Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Andy Hamilton, Fred McCauley, Matthew Paris and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Carolyn Brown. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Rodri Crooks and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Andy Walton and Juliet Myers. The producer was Katie Tyrrell.